You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Kaveh Zahedi. Kaveh, thanks so much for being with me today.
You're welcome.
Kaveh, we're talking from New York City, of course. It's the 20th of May, and I want to talk to you about your work, your films, what you're working on. So to begin with, there's information in this interview so people can understand more about your work and see some of your films, but let's talk about what you're currently involved in right now. What's happening at this moment in your creative sphere?
Well, the main thing I've been working on is this show that I've been doing for a few years now, and I'm on the third season of the show, so I'm working on that. That's my main thing. And I'm also working on a book that I'm writing. Someone asked me to write. So those are the two really main things I'm working on.
And can we talk about the book? What is the book going to be about?
It's called The Autobiography of My Autobiography. And it's basically an autobiography of the writing of the book. It's basically about, I have a year to write it, and it's basically very much about its own writing. And but it's also just about this year, like what's happening this year as I'm writing this book.
Okay, so I want to understand more about that, because that's interesting. So this is an autobiography, and it's about 2020, this year. But somehow there's another layer to it. It's about the writing itself. Tell me a little bit more about that. That second layer that makes it, as you said, if I understood correctly, an autobiography of an autobiography, kind of.
Yeah, I mean, all my work, you know, my film work is sort of like this. Also, it's mostly I make films about making films, and so when I was asked to write a book, the publisher liked this proposal of writing a book about writing a book. So it's a lot of it's journals, a lot of it's emails and texts, a lot of it's just sort of like, you know, it's mostly just about this year. But, you know, sometimes I'll have these long digressions about things that happened before that sort of explain things that are happening now. So it was really, how do you write an autobiography that it feels, like not a story that is kind of like reified, but it's kind of also like my work is very present tense. Like, it was just kind of a way to sort of mix present and past tense in a way that felt honest.
Okay. I like this. I like talking about this because we can also talk about, of course, your series and your show. This also gets into the craft of how you're thinking about and writing in other respects, it seems. So as you're approaching this, and perhaps this can also dovetail into how you're approaching the writing otherwise in your films, It's not a script that you're starting out with. Just as in this book, you're not starting out, it sounds like, with a shape of what the whole thing will look like. It's you're starting out with the thing itself and investigating the idea of even writing this autobiography, right? We're and I'm just trying to separate this or marry it with your process in working on films. The process to begin this autobiography is what exactly? Because you're not sketching it out. You're not looking at a large meta picture of it. Are you
Right. No, I'm not. And that's kind of what I was trying to avoid, I think. I mean, I think, you know, we all tell stories about our lives and, you know, they tend to get reified from telling. And I think I just wanted to address the question of, you know, autobiography in a way that it avoided some of those pitfalls. But you know, it's very project. I don't know what it's going to be until it happens. Like, I don't know what happens. I don't know what's going to happen today, for example. So it's really kind of like a journal, in a way, but it's a journal that, you know, has lots of, it's a journal about its own writing, I guess. But reality is always the text or the thing I'm trying to represent, or it's always the script is just what happened, or, you know, how I experienced what happened, or my interpretation of what happened. And with the show, I don't have a script. I just talk, and I just tell the story of what's happened behind the scenes of the making of the show. And then I use that as the basis or as the script, and, you know, I tweak it to make it, you know, better or more clear or interesting or funny. But it's basically just based on reality. That's my canvas.
And it's so that's fascinating to hear, and will be very interesting to read a course. So to move back in your career a little bit, and you've had a kind of very unusual career, incredibly atypical for a filmmaker in your approach. It's also an influential career. The first thing I saw of yours, probably like so many people, was I am a sex addict, and a lot of these are also are very emotional and psychological and difficult for the audience to deal with, I would imagine, as much as it is, you know, for yourself to deal with, to kind of construct all this. So if we can kind of step back and look at the work that you've done so far, it's been evolving, right, since your early work to now. And where do you think that's come to? Like, in terms of where you're at now, we're in the middle of this pandemic. You're a mature filmmaker. You have a sense of this kind of very unusual process, the book about the book, the show about the show. Where has that brought you now in terms of all the difficult material you've dealt with in the past and up to now? Now you're a father, you're in New York City. How has what you've been through affected the next project? And I guess I'm talking still about your book, but I'm trying to find out where you've evolved to since you've begun writing, you know, your earliest films. What's your difference in perspective now as a father and as someone who's done an awful lot of work? How is your perspective different now than it was when you started? And let's say when you made, you know, that first film that I mentioned, or that I know of initially, that's how I got to know you, which was I Am a Sex Addict. How have things changed since, in terms of your way of looking at your work and how it's communicating with the world, if that's not too convoluted a question?
Well, you know, I Am a Sex Addict came out of a very intense experience of going to my first Sex Addicts Anonymous meeting. And I remember it was like an epiphany. Like, I was just like, oh, I'm a sex addict, and that's a great title for a movie. And I've just found my next film. It's a story of, like, what brought me here, how I ended up coming into this room. And it felt like this is the film I was born to make. It's because it was very personal. It talked about things that people don't talk about. And I'm not sure why, but I feel like I was the one person who would be willing to talk about these things and could do it. So that film really came out with a very strong inner urge, in the sense that all the pain and suffering that had led me there had been for a reason. And I think maybe that notion of everything being for a reason is kind of behind all my work. And I think my work really, on a psychological level, is an attempt to sort of come to terms with or redeem the pain and suffering that is life, and the loss, the constant loss that is every day. And there's an attempt to sort of save it or keep it or ennoble it or enliven it or make it meaningful or worthwhile. You know, even something like if you stub your toe, you know, it's like it's just a negative, like it hurts, and there's nothing good about it. But, you know, you can make it good. You make good by making a film about your toe, by writing a book about your toe, or you can make it good by just sort of feeling into the pain of it and letting that resonate with a lesson in your life about how you need to be in relationship to the other pains in your life. You know, I find that, like, with tennis, it's one of the things I like about playing tennis is I'm not that invested in winning, really, and so I'm able to sort of look at it with some perspective and sort of watch how I react to the ball coming at me fast, coming at me slow, you know, like, a lot of things I do in tennis are just things I do in life, and it sort of is a portal into my own way of being that I can sort of see because I have distance. Whereas when I'm in my life, I don't have the distance. That's one of the nice things about film is you have to watch something with distance. You know, like, you're not implicated in the thing. You don't have to interact or take a stand. You can just watch it unfold, and you notice things about yourself. through that. And in the same way with tennis, like I noticed, for example, that I was always trying to get the ball right on the line, and it was often, I was often an inch or two off the line, and I would lose the point. But there was something in me that didn't want to just get it safely in the line, which I could do because I'm not that bad at tennis, but I wanted to be right on the line because that's where it's exciting. And I think all my work is kind of trying to get the ball on the line, which is to say, to push at the edge of my ability or at the edge, the envelope of what I can say or what I, or what's sayable or what's acceptable to say. And it's always moving that line. It's always moving based on where you're at in your life. And I think I'm sex addict was a very embarrassing film to make. It was about my addiction to prostitutes in my 20s. And, you know, just putting that out there and seeing people react to it, whether positive or negative, you know, it strengthens you. It makes you less embarrassed. And I think honesty is a muscle that the more you do it, the better you get at it because you sort of withstand it. You survive it. You survive the humiliation of being honest. And that makes it easier to be honest the next time. And my films are really just almost like advocating of honesty as a way of life in the absence of knowledge, in the absence of certainty, in the absence of a worldview that is fixed or correct even. Like we don't know. I mean, we don't know anything. I studied philosophy in Yale, and that was what I came with, was like, no one knows. So what do? You know, like really it's up to you to decide. And there's no truth. There's just these kind of different sort of spectrums of truth or truthfulness for yourself and for some others, but not for all others. So I'm just trying to be the best version of me that I can be. And it's constantly shifting. And also I can't make the same film twice. Like it's kind of like a disingenuous or inauthentic or an act of fear to sort of try to keep doing what worked before. I remember when I was even just like in junior high school, I noticed that I would tell certain stories because they would get a good reaction. And I realized there was something inauthentic about that. Like you should talk from the present moment, not from some past moment, and not from some future imagined moment. Like what is happening right now? How do you tell the story now as opposed to how would you tell the story a year ago? And the book is really about that. It's like, how do you stay as close to the present tense? You know, Wallace Stevens has this poem called Of Modern Poetry, and he says the modern poetry is the poem of the act of the mind in the act of finding what will suffice. And I think what will suffice changes at every moment. Like what will suffice now is different than what's going to suffice in 10 minutes. And so the book is really an attempt to sort of like find that truth place in the voice of me to you, the reader, and to stay in the authenticity of the now. And journaling is kind of the way that kind of manifests, I think, most clearly. So it's really an attempt to do that for a year and just sort of see where the movement of being takes me, where time takes me, where reality takes me. And it's taking me right here, you know, right now, talking to you.
I like that. Yeah, then that's clear. So I also want to ask, so in that context, there's these things that can be difficult to say, can be difficult for other people to hear. Your subject matter seems to be completely wide open. Is there anything that you feel, because you were talking about that line, right, that which is such a nice kind of visual and conceptual idea. Is there things as you construct your work now, the films, the writing, you know, is there things that you still can't go over? Is there things that you must hold yourself back from because culturally, where we're at right now in 2020, these things are too difficult to share, for example. Is there something like that? Is there a line you're reaching or material you think, I can't share this? Like, this is kind of an odd example, but I always notice in television work, whether it's anything from Lena Dunham to lots of other new work, talking about abortion on television or in almost any way is an incredibly difficult thing to approach and still seems oddly enough taboo in some ways. Is there aspects to your writing now or work that that have kind of areas that you have to avoid or no?
I mean, No, I mean, my work is all about, you know, pushing the envelope.
Right.
You know, that said, you know, like, there's a balancing act that any artist or performer or whatever has to do between pushing the envelope and not pushing so far that you lose your audience completely. And so it's not so much like I can't talk about certain things, but the way you talk about things is very important and makes the difference between, for example, if you wanted, I mean, I think filmmaking, like any art form really, it's kind of an act of seduction in the sense that if you go on a date with somebody, you know, there's this process of you're basically trying to get the other person to like you and to want to spend time with you, or you're exploring whether you want to spend time with them. But there's this kind of interplay where, I don't know, like everyone has a spectrum of sort of their best self to their worst self, and even their most, like, attractive self to their most lovely self. And, you know, I think everybody aspires to acceptance, being accepted by the other in their entire spectrum. And yet, when you go on the first date, for example, you don't put your worst clothes on, you put your best clothes on. And in the same way, when you're making a film, you have an audience who's, like, trying to decide whether they want to watch this or not, or they want to, like, leave now and look at something else. So you have to sort of, like, put on your best clothes, whatever form of clothing you think is attractive to the other person. And it might be, you know, it might be torn jeans or it might be a tuxedo, but you're, you know, that's depending on who you think you're trying to, who's going to be interested in what you have to say. So there's always a certain amount of, I don't know, management or presentation that you have to be sensitive to. And it's not a bad thing. It's also an act of generosity and just sort of helping people to understand that you're not dangerous, that it's okay, that you're not going to hurt them. You know, like in a date, a lot of what you do is to show, like, that it's safe, you know.
Right.
You're not going to attack them or kidnap them or whatever. And so artistically, that's also true. Like, it's safe. Like, you can let go and just sort of let it in, and you're going to have it a few times. And, you know, some people are not convinced. They're very skeptical. They're like, I don't like what you're doing, and I don't trust you. And they're not your audience, I guess. Or you haven't done a good job winning them over. And again, it's not for everybody. Like, nobody can please everybody. Nobody should try, even. But you do want to attract people who would like you if they knew you. And so how do you do that is the question.
Kaveh, I want to thank you so much for discussing this with me. I just have one last question for you, which is, what are you reading at the moment?
I'm reading a book that was recommended to me because of the book I'm writing. And it's a book by Jeff Dyer. Do you know Jeff Dyer?
No.
He's a British writer. He's an interesting writer. He writes kind of about, he's also kind of a very meta writer. This is a book about trying to write a book about James Lawrence. And it's quite good. Like, he talks about, you know, his frustrations with the writing process and his procrastination and really the first stuff about Lawrence and, you know, kind of bringing in his own life and how it, like, is like Lawrence's or not like Lawrence's. So it's kind of it's really almost a book about writing. It's basically very similar to what I'm doing. I would say it's the same genre, a book about writing a book. And it's quite good. I kind of was down on it at first because I thought he was trying a little too hard to ingratiate with the reader. But now that I've gotten into it and he's become a character, that I kind of am more well-rounded, I'm really enjoying it. And I'm not a big H. Lawrence fan. I mean, he's never been one of my favorite writers, but I'm really enjoying this book about writing about him. And someone just also recommended this book. It's called Foucault in California. You know, the French philosopher Foucault apparently did LSD in the Valley in 1975. And one of the people he did LSD with wrote a book about the experience. And I'm always looking for, like, good movie ideas. And I thought, oh, that's a good movie idea. So I'm reading that as well. I just started that last night.
Kaveh, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. I really appreciate your time and your work.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me. Thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.